Jim Bullion, our Director of Government Affairs, is going to moderate this panel. And take it away, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler. Yeah, my name again is Jim Bullion. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Renew Wisconsin. Very excited to be here, and what a great crowd. We have a terrific panel this morning of policymakers for you to talk about some of the important issues in energy and renewables in the state of Wisconsin that are coming in the next few years. Immediately to my left, first, is Ellen Nowak. She's chairperson of the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. Ellen was first appointed to the PSC in 2011 and named chairperson in 2015. In 2018, she served as secretary of the Department of Administration, then returned as chairperson of the PSC just this January. She's also on the board of directors of NARUC, the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. Next, we have Representative Mike Kuglich is from New Berlin, and he represents the 84th Assembly District. Mike is chairman of the Assembly Energy and Utilities Committee and is currently serving his fourth term in the State Assembly. He is a former small business owner and has been active in several trade associations, including time as president of the Wisconsin Restaurant Association. Next is Representative David Crowley from Milwaukee. He represents the 17th Assembly District. David is also a member of the Assembly Energy and Utilities Committee and will serve as chair of the Wisconsin Black Caucus this session. He was first elected to the Wisconsin Assembly in 2016. David was previously a policy director for State Senator Nakia Harris-Dodd and is active in many Milwaukee area community organizations. And on the far left there for us is Senator Janet Bewley from Mason in northern Wisconsin and represents the 25th Senate District. Janet's a member of the Senate Committee on Utilities and Housing and has been the Senate Assistant Minority Leader since 2017. She's represented the 25th Senate District since 2014 and after serving two terms in the Wisconsin Assembly, and was previously a member of the Ashland City Council. So we got a great diverse group up here, and looking forward to the discussion. So why don't we just start out with sort of a general overview from all of our panelists about what's happening in your committees or in your districts or in the regulatory world, and things that you think are going to be happening in the next couple of years and issues that you know are going to be coming forward. So Ellen, if you want to start.
Sure, thank you, and thanks for having me. It's good to be back. And I also want to acknowledge Becky Vock, our new commissioner. I know Governor Evers pointed her out, but I'm happy to have her on board and be a part of the team as we move forward. So I was gone about a year and learned that a lot of the fundamentals obviously still haven't changed. Reliability, affordability, resilience, those are all still there, and we're going to continue to tackle those issues as we move forward. As Michael noted in his presentation, there's a lot of more solar in the queue for us that we're going to be looking at. It's going to be a busier year at the commission with more CPCNs and CA approvals and so forth. So that'll be exciting, and I think that's something that we're looking forward to working on. And we're seeing that, as you all noted, it's because of the economics of renewable energy, which is, I think, the appropriate way to integrate the renewables rather than, a few years ago when there was a lot of push to do more renewables. And, as at first and foremost, we're economic regulators. And that is my concern for ratepayers, is at what cost. And now, since we are seeing the cost of renewables come down, it's not surprising at all that you're seeing utilities and more homeowners move to that. And I think that's a much better way to do it rather than have a mandate to do it. Because again, as regulators, we not only have to keep price in mind, but the reliability and its impact on the grid. And that has to be a well thought out integration and not something that is dictated by whether it's Washington, D.C. or someone in the Capitol. I think it's just something that we have to do, that the economics and reliability have to meet at that spot. And I think we're starting to see that. And that's why we're seeing a few things. And of course, the other thing that we always keep our eye on, and we will, and I had a meeting on this just the other day, is the cybersecurity issue. Continuing to be vigilant on it as the attackers get smarter every single day on it. And we just had an issue with some of our utilities the other day, receiving phishing emails looking like they're coming from the PSC. And so we have to always be on top of that. We work closely with General Dunbar, the State Homeland Security Council. We are ahead, I think, of some other states on interacting between the utilities, have a great relationship mm-hmm. with our emergency management folks, and I want to continue that relationship because it's very important for them to know each other when there is an emergency, and we can help on that. So there's a lot of exciting things ahead. I'm happy to be back, and again, happy to be here this morning.
Thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. that security issue is definitely an interesting one that we have to pay attention to, so mm-hmm. appreciate you bringing that up. Mm-hmm. Representative Kuglich, what would you like to start with?
Well, I think Ellen took everything from us. No, but it's always good to work with Ellen. Ellen and I've been the Energy Utility Chair for 5 years now in the Assembly, and we've been an opportunity to do kind of the circuit and have an opportunity to talk and meet with individuals like you in the audience. And it's always good to not only be able to talk to you, but afterwards to hear, you know, your concerns and issues. So make sure after this panel discussion, if you have any questions, I'll be hanging around the side because it's always good to hear from you. From a personal standpoint, probably one of the policy things, not so much energy utility, but one that I'm going to address is 5G technology, a small cell. When we look at this industry, renewables, it's all about technology. And as we go forward as you know, technology for autonomous vehicles and everything else that we talk about is 5G technology. So right now, the state of Wisconsin is probably the only one that doesn't have those policies in place, and we need to address that. But from the energy utility side, Chairwoman Nowak talked about kind of the mantra of energy and utility, right? It's safe, reliable, and affordable. And one of the things that was mentioned earlier by one of the speakers is why is solar and wind and renewables really popular? Why are we seeing the growth? And if you look at the MISO queue on renewable, it's unbelievable of what they want to be proposed in Wisconsin. So the growth of this technology in renewable is phenomenal. And the reason is because now, when you look at that safe, yes, it's safe. Reliable, I still have issues, right? It's great, you know. Wind is great when it's windy, and the sun is great when it's sunny, solar is. But the advent of battery storage, right? So that is gonna be the next game changer to renewable energy. But the number one reason that it is growing is because it's affordable now. And it's to a point where, you know, we don't need, as the chairperson said, we don't need the government mandates anymore saying you have to do this. Right now, from the pure economics, it makes sense. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of the large utility scale, because at the end of the day, I'm concerned about, you know, safe is important, reliable is important, but affordability. And I think we heard from our governor, and I'm not saying this, but the governor said this, is that we have some of the highest rates in the Midwest. So what I hope to see is as the affordability in renewable energy will drive down the rates for the individual ratepayer. Because sometimes people are so focused on, are we getting our energy from solar? Are we getting it from coal? Are we getting it from wind? Are we getting it from nuclear? At the end of the day, we need a mix, but I want to make sure it's affordable, because everybody in this room has to pay the rates. So that's going to be my emphasis as I go forward as the chair. You know, we're going to look at each one of these silos. Is it safe? Yes. Is it reliable? But the main thing, I think, as we go forward is the affordability.
Excellent. Just to let you know, on your tables, there are some cards. We've got some questions that we may not even get through the questions we have, but if you have some questions you'd like to ask the panel, there are cards there, and if you want to hand them up to Tyler or one of the staff, if we have time at the end, we might be able to take one or two. Representative Crowley.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Oh, man, I feel like a teacher right now. So my name is David Crowley, again, 17th Assembly District, and I'm probably the newest member of the Energy and Utilities, so please bear with me. But as we think about renewable energies and the impact and what we see in the future personally, I think that we have a prime opportunity to take advantage of what we see happening across the country as far as making sure that we can rely on renewable energies. We have seen cities, we've seen states up the game and up there as far as making sure that the consumption of energy is coming from renewables. And I think that we can do that. As the representative mentioned, the cost is coming down. And that's a great thing for all of us. But because the cost is coming down, we see that energy companies are more now in tune and relying and building more solar and more wind opportunities right now. And I think we need to take advantage of that, but more importantly, making sure that we can expand that so people can have access to do these on their homes. Especially being in a community here in the city of Milwaukee where there are many low-income folks who wouldn't have the opportunity to pay for it. At the same time, we need to look at it. How do we make sure that those folks have the opportunity to connect into renewable energies and making sure that the cost shifting doesn't affect particularly low-income families. So I'm not going to belabor the point of how we need to use it, how the cost is going down, because many of you are better experts than I am in this field. And so I think at the end of the day, it's about what are we going to do at the state, particularly the legislature, in making sure that renewable energy is a viable option.
Thank you. Senator Bewley.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everyone. As a person who represents a district very far from this area, I'm used to looking at issues such as providing energy in a safe, reliable, and affordable way. From the perspective of people who typically don't have access to policymakers or those who make decisions about how they pay, what they pay. And so I feel a responsibility to make sure that the most distant voices, both as consumers and as providers of these innovative products and energy, are able to see themselves in the conversations that take place in rooms like this at the PSC and in the legislature. I deal with things from a very, very micro level. A person who may be living right now off the grid in northern Wisconsin, a family who might not be able to afford their utility bill, a worker at an energy plant in Superior who may worry about what's going on with the construction of a new power plant, a job that they desperately need. Someone who is thinking about installing solar, but knows that the providers of that information, the companies that may be willing to trek out in the woods, or the utility providers who might be either extremely receptive to the idea or a little cool to it. I guess what I'm trying to say is there is a way to look at the complexities of this issue from a way that is going to be aware of the large macro policy decisions that we make, from mandates on the government side to programs that incentivize to downright requirements, but then all the way down to the person who says, I think I want to do the right thing. And I know that we resist mandates. We resist telling people what to do. But at the same time, we must acknowledge that something such as the good news of solar coming down in price is because it was nudged along. There were places that did have portfolio requirements or programs that incentivized the research and development of solar and other renewable sources. We've got to keep a balance of resources that are going to keep the new technologies affordable themselves. The research and development has got to be nurtured, and we do need ways to still incentivize. We can't pull off and say this is a fully mature industry that does not need our careful attention to see that it gets through its teenage years. I don't think it's reached puberty yet. So we need to make sure that we keep it along. And when it develops acne, we get it to the place where it can keep going. And I believe that as a policymaker, I have that responsibility to, again, see to it that all levels of this very complex and wonderful industry receives what it needs on the policy side so that we can satisfy as many sectors of this fascinating industry as possible.
Well, our goal was to have a diverse panel, and I think we achieved that. All right. Well, let's get into a couple of issue areas and kind of talk about some specifics. So one of the first ones that I think a lot of people are thinking about these days is split government and how people are going to work together in the state of Wisconsin and in Washington. Polls conducted, including those done by conservative pollsters, show very solid support for renewable energy, especially if the cost is cost effective. Do you think renewable energy is an area where we can get some bipartisan support for policy changes in the next couple of years? And if so, what policy issues do you think we can work together on?
I'll let Mike answer.
Yeah,
that.
Mike, why don't you start?
Wow. So there's about four different questions in there.
Yeah.
But I would say, first off, it's somewhat early to really see the direction that we're going to go. I think both sides are willing to look for common ground. I'm not sure really what policies we need to change. When if we look at the presentation that was done before we came up, it seems to me that things are going really good. And sometimes I'm a believer that when government gets in the way, it goes the other direction. Mm-hmm. So if we were looking at a more dismal presentation earlier, I would say maybe we do need to get involved and, as the senator said, nudge some things along. But when you look at what has happened last year alone, what's on the PSC queue going forward, and then if you happen to look at the MISO queue as to how much solar and wind is proposed, you know, part of me says, let's not get in the way and mess that up. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure, you know, there will be different issues that would come up. And at this point, you know, split government or not, some in this room may believe that the last 8 years wasn't a positive surrounding for renewable energy. But if you look at what the presentation was, it was successful, you know. And I think just moving forward that our job is to stay out of the way and let the success continue.
Yeah.
And to build on what Representative Puglet said, I mean, Michael Vickerman's presentation was really good. I mean, it showed, I think in the last 8 years, Focus on Energy has provided $54 million in incentives mm-hmm. for renewable projects alone, $54 million. And I think it's important because we grew that program year after year. We took it from a program where it had to be stopped for a while because the payback was so bad. And we had to restructure and recalibrate it back in the around 2011, 2012. So we got it back on track because we knew there was a demand for it, and it's grown. We are one of the few states that have a statewide mandated energy efficiency program. And of those states, we're the only state that includes renewables in that program. So I like to put that out there to, one, dispel the myth that somehow we are behind other states. I think that we have a unique program here. There's a lot of activity and people involved in it. And, you know, it continues to see support. We are helping a lot of businesses and residents with their energy efficiency projects. And again, the incentives that, you know, renewables are coming down in price, they're highly incentivized at the federal level. And perhaps we need to recalibrate that at some point and to help, again, spur that market. One thing we did with the renewable program within the Focus a couple years ago was we wanted to see more people be able to take advantage of it. So we lowered the incentive amount a little bit so it could spread out, the money could spread out among more people. And guess what? It worked. You know, you didn't see people not taking advantage of it because the incentive went down. You saw more people taking advantage. And that's the kind of thing I think, those are the things we can look at. But I, you know, on balance, though, I agree with Representative Kuglich that sometimes when government starts to, the best thing the government can do is sometimes get out of the way mm-hmm. and let the market work. Yep. And again, that's happening. That's happening.
Representative Crowley?
Well, would like at least to be bipartisanship as it relates to, is making sure it's affordable and folks have access to it, making sure to continue to expand it. Even though there are different types of incentives for businesses and residents to take advantage of, many of the people that, for example, in my district still would not be able to take advantage of the incentives or pay for something of this scale. And so I would love to work with the legislature in making sure that we can do something creative as it relates to how do people actually pay for getting these types of solar systems onto their homes. I know that third-party financing is something that has been talked about, something that we should definitely look at, but it's going to be up to the legislature, which I think in the past decade has not been interested in actually taking this on. But I would definitely love for us to actually have this conversation on how we be get more a little bit more creative in making sure that everybody has access.
You know, the question that was posed to us was pretty basic, and it's can a divided government work in this arena? And although that is the word that everyone uses, and I know the moderator used that word because that is how it is being described, I wish we had another word. Because right away, divided government means polarized, or it means there's one side and there's another side. The government is representative. You can call it diverse or balanced, or you can describe the fact that there are two parties represented in a positive way rather than a negative one. It divided doesn't mean bad, wrong, no work, can't do it. It means work harder, find a way, get it done. But we still have the same jobs to do. It is more challenging, perhaps, but I believe it can yield better outcomes because we have more voices, and it makes us have to hone our craft. Can a divided government work? Absolutely, because it has to, because that's what it is. We can't sit back and say, not gonna work. Can't get along, You know, and yes, no, up, down, red, blue, we must change the way we describe that and look at why we're here. We are here because there are some fascinating good ideas about our future, everyone's future. And we have to be able to imagine how we get along and solve those problems without looking at the arguments and the divisiveness of yesterday and saying, you know, I gotta make sure I make my point better tomorrow about why my side is right. No. We have to look at tomorrow and why we have to work together. And when we talk about the words that we used when we talk about energy policy, it's always safe, reliable, and affordable. But we all know it has to be the right thing to do. It has to be the right thing to do. That's the hardest question, and it's the one that we avoid because we always think that we're going to fight about it. No, we're not. We're going to discuss it. We're going to imagine it. We're going to come together with a better understanding of what the right thing to do is. If we just keep saying it's safe, reliable, and affordable, there's lots of things that are safe, right, and affordable, but that are wrong. That are wrong, that are going down the wrong road. We can't forget the fourth element. Is it the right thing to do? And that's why a divided government, a diverse government, whatever, That's why that puts us in a better place to find out what the right thing is.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's been mentioned a couple of times. At the end of 2018, we just surpassed a total of 100 megawatts of solar in the state combined. But we have about 740 megawatts of wind energy. Oops, I'm sorry. We have about 740 megawatts of wind energy right now. Because the price of utility scale solar and wind has come down so much, developers are proposing nearly 5,000 megawatts of new utility scale solar projects and up to 1,100 megawatts of new wind power in Wisconsin on that MISO queue. The developers are coming forward because the prices and the economy is going that way. What are your thoughts about this trend, and what do we need to do policy-wise to address this potential growth? I don't know if Rick Crowley or you start on that end.
I think that we need to continue to build on successes with our eyes wide open to the challenges. One of the things that I'm always aware of is that as we move forward with a new area, a new technology, we do what comes naturally, which is how do we satisfy the biggest population, how do we get the greatest impact or the most good? And you fall back on strategies that deal with density and how many households per mile or all sorts of things. And we end up, I don't want to say making mistakes, but overlooking things. And I'm going to make a comparison to broadband for just a moment, although it doesn't really completely apply. But when we found out about the technology of the internet, we wanted to make it available to as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. And we ended up having policies in place that made decision making such that people in rural areas didn't get it. For one reason or another, no blame intended. It came overnight. Doesn't it feel like it happened overnight and suddenly we have people with and people without? We're kind of catch up on that. It's a little harder now because of the fact that it's up and running so well in so many places that we can't get it out to where there's none. I don't want to make those mistakes as we think about how we deliver energy and how we empower local units of government. The people who make sure it's done correctly, inspectors. We talked about the number of people who can inspect some of these installations. We don't have enough. We have to make sure that we have things in place, both policy, both laws, and the actual day-to-day operations, so that no one is left behind. And I want to make sure that when we do implement, when we do keep going, that we're always aware of it can't just serve some or even most. It has to be all. It has to be all, or else we're not doing our jobs.
Back off of what the senator said, I think it's just making sure we continue to invest in that type of infrastructure to make sure that we can actually, in my opinion, all approve, right? And so in order to make that happen, I mean, we have to do certain things around the state. I mean, in the city of Milwaukee, I mean, with our permit process, we was able to streamline a little bit better than some of the other local municipalities. And so what can we do at the state level to make sure that the process is not only streamlined, but we're also reducing some of the soft costs, the upfront costs for folks. And so at the end of the day, we need to be figuring out how do we build an infrastructure to support what's already in the MISO crew queue, because we know that it's going to continue to grow for years to come, especially when we think about, I mean, at the end of the day, it's about investing in the infrastructure itself. So if you can talk about solar, we can talk about wind, but that also relates to electric vehicles as well. And so it's really about what kind of investments are we going to make up front at the state level to make sure that we are prepared for these types of projects.
Thanks. Representative Kugler, any thoughts?
Can you just repeat the question again?
It has to do with the MISO queue and all of the large-scale solar projects that are coming to the state. 5,000 megawatts of solar and 1,100 megawatts. I mean, there's lots of issues out there about local, community's opposition or, you know, the need for that, and maybe getting rid of the power of the coal plants, how we handle that, those kind of issues that come up with large scale change in our infrastructure.
So I think when you look at it might have been the senator, we said you have to look at the big picture. And you know, whenever you go through transformation, and that's really what's happening now, is you have to look at the big picture, and there's a lot of parts, you know. For as much as people want to reduce coal or eliminate coal, it's still going to be a part of the mix going forward. Because when you talk about reliability, right, I mean, at the end of the day, you need baseload. Everybody in this room knows what baseload is. And if it's going to be gas or coal or nuclear, you need some baseload until the game changer comes, which is the battery storage. So I think when you got to look at the new technologies and the growth in renewables, we have to look at how does that fit into the big picture? And that's where you look at, you know, regulatory and you look at the local end is, I mean, if I don't think it's necessary for the state to pass a law that says local municipalities should have training programs on renewables. I mean, I think that's just part of a logical step. So I guess when I look at the big, is what you're saying is yes, are there things we need to address? Yes, they will be identified as we move forward, and there's more renewables, you know, developed and installed. But the state can't be the total answer for the industry, because I believe the industry is doing a great job on its own.
You know, I still believe in all of the above policy that used to be kind of the buzz phrase several years ago. And I think it's still important because, again, as a regulator, we look at reliability and affordability. And just like your financial portfolio, you have to keep a balanced portfolio in the energy mix. When we look at new generation coming on, if it's coming from an investor-owned utility, we have to consider, is it needed? Not do we want it, not because, well, it's coming down in price or everyone's doing it, we need to do it. Is it needed for the ratepayers? Can they afford it? Should they be paying for it? And, oh, by the way, what's going to be set aside for that? Or are we replacing something that's retired? Adding new generation is not like going out and buying a new car and trading in your old car. Ratepayers invest in long-term investments, sometimes paid over 30, 40, 50 years. And if you have a new plant that's not that far along and being paid for, we can't turn it back in. So it's all based on economics. So it's incumbent to show that, you know, it not only is a reliable thing, but it's affordable and it makes economic sense to make that switch at that time. And that's what we look for as regulators, too. The other thing is siting. You know, we're starting to see some issues with the large-scale solar in particular, and we've seen it in wind projects. We still have a lawsuit going from when it started in 2012. You know, there are, I think someone told me yesterday, 1 megawatt is about 3 to 5 acres. So now you're talking 200 megawatt. That's a lot of acres. Where are you going to put it? Those are all things that need to be considered, and we weigh all of those things. So those are it's not a short answer, and we're built in volumes of material for us to read.
Yes, there is, and we've only got a short period of time to talk about it. So
yeah,
and we only have just a few minutes left, so I got a couple of other topics, and I'll just kind of throw it up for final comments, and if you want to include the comments or topics of things like customer-owned solar, third-party financing, electric vehicles was mentioned. I mean, there's some really interesting high-tech topics of things that are coming in the future. It's really an exciting time to be in this industry for everybody here, and we're really looking forward to it. So if you have any sort of final thoughts about those issues, or just sort of, you know, what does it look like for us in the future?
Low-cost clean energy is what it looks like. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that, I mean, absolutely, I think everybody's been hitting it right on the nail on the head. Talk about, we got to look at the overall picture and everything. But at the end of the day, we have to start getting prepared for this. We have to make sure that we are building the infrastructure of charging stations for electric vehicles to reduce range anxiety. We need to be making sure that we need to look at the opportunity of third-party financing. I know some of the energy companies have created some programs to make sure that people have access to solar panels and things of that nature. But we have to be a little bit more creative. And the reason why we have to be creative is that it's always changing. And if we don't get ahead of this game and ahead of the technology that's going to be coming down the pipeline in the next few years, we will be lagging behind. Not as far as making sure that we can make it affordable, but making sure that we're taking advantage of the new technology that's available to us.
Senator Buehle, do you have a...
I'll end. Thank you very much for your patience in letting us speak with you today. I'll have my final remarks by saying that I appreciate very much that we are dealing both, again, on the very micro level and on the very large macro level, a fascinating issue. And I do know that we have to be open-minded to the future and not assume some things. For example, the presence, the effect of the investor-owned utilities is important and significant. I think it's not the only option. I believe that the co-ops have a strong future and an extremely important role to play. And it doesn't have to be one or the other. It has to be all. I believe that we have to think at not only an array of energy sources, an array of how we provide them, and an array of how we finance them. We have to believe in the future and the technology that we are going to get smarter and smarter when it comes to renewables, and those panels are going to get smarter and smaller as we go. And I think that we also must make sure that we keep our eyes on the smallest component. The electric cars are going to need charging stations. And I want to make sure that where people need them, even if there aren't a whole lot of people in the area, if there's a road going through it, we got to make sure they are where they're needed and not where it's just easy. So thank you. The answers are in this room. The range of opinions, the political perspectives, they're all in this room, and we have room for them all.
Final thoughts?
You know, it was interesting. And one of the things that Chairperson Nowak mentioned is that in order for this to grow, right, in renewable energy to grow, is there has to be the need for capacity. And that is, I think, something that everybody in this room needs to understand. You can't just go out and propose and build renewable energy if there's nobody that is going to purchase it. And that gets to the big question that Jefferson was talking about is what you need to close something to be able to build something new. So the big issue is how is that going to be addressed in the future? How are stranded assets going to be addressed? Because that, I think, is future. It's the big future to everything in this room and the continued growth of renewables. Because we can't keep paying on 20 years of something that has been closed and now still invest in something new. So I think that has to be addressed. And I think it could have, depending on how it's addressed, have a big impact in the future of renewables.
Thanks for having me. Just want to touch briefly on electric vehicles. I think you're going to be seeing a little more discussion of that coming from the commission. Before I left, I started a discussion on grid modernization and really wanted to engage a lot of stakeholders on a whole host of issues. I think we identified 10. I know we always participate in those meetings, and I want to revive that. And one of the key topics was EVs, and I want to push that a little more. Well, the EV adoption in Wisconsin and actually nationwide is really small. I think there's less than 2,000 vehicles registered in Wisconsin that are EV hybrid over almost 7 million cars. So, you know, we're talking about, there's all kinds of questions that come up. You raise charging stations. regulations, who pays for those? You know, because, I mean, are they utility paid for? You know, and why? Most people that own an EV, EV hybrid are middle to upper class. I don't think it's right for all the ratepayers to subsidize the charging stations, maybe for someone that drives an EV, right? So we need to look at who pays for them. Where are they located? Are they privately owned? Are they utility owned? If they're privately owned, are they a reseller? I don't know. These are all kinds of questions we have to look at. What other state agencies need to get involved? DOT revenue. So, I mean, EV, again, is a small obvious word to bring up a host of questions that I think we all need to talk about and talk about together. And it's good to do it now, although for decades, you can go back into the 1910s and see articles that EVs are the next big thing. I think, though, the technology is a little further along now than it was in 1917. So, you know, we should be prepared for that so we aren't caught. And some other states have done some things. Michigan in particular have done, opened some dockets on it. We're going to take a look at that. And, again, it's a discussion that we need to have with everybody involved.
Yeah, it's a big topic. Well, thank you very much. This was a great panel. We only just dipped our toe into so many issues as you brought up. Any one of these issues could be a day-long seminar, and we'll be Renew and all of our members and the people we work with in the industry will be in talking to you, talking to each other to try and find solutions that work for everybody.